Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Well, Patriots Day comes out this week, I guess, as we're taping it. I'm going to see it Wednesday night at the screening. And I noticed Dick Donahue, who was, you know, injured, almost gravely injured in the shootout of Watertown, bled out, you know, very, very lucky to be alive. Also a classmate, the Academy classmate of Sean Collier, was tweeting about it and conversing with people back and forth. Dick went to the same high school I did, grew up in Winchester, graduated 5 years later, which I didn't realize. We found out later on in the podcast. I thought he'd be a good guy to come in and talk to. And Ben, you listened to it. We just wrapped it up. I don't know. It was maybe a half-hour conversation.
Yeah, just about a half an hour.
Pretty good, I thought.
Yeah, it was very good. The biggest thing I took away from it was I got to call my mom and figure out what blood type I am.
True.
No idea. I know I'm either a universal donor or a universal recipient. I just don't know which one.
Well, no one's going to shoot you, I don't think.
I hope not.
I shouldn't guarantee that, actually. Me, it's different for me. I'm almost certain that's going to happen, so I should probably figure that out myself.
See, that's where I think it might happen for me, too, because I'm constantly with you in the same studio.
So you'll be like, could you swim the line of fire? You'll jump in front for me if it comes down to it?
As long as someone's shooting a plastic gun.
That's good. That's
if
good
Newton's point. Own, what's his name?
Who?
The actor, the bad guy in Line of Fire.
John Malkovich.
If Newton's John Malkovich comes, he lives in Newton.
I thought he was in Cambridge. It was a Newton?
I thought it was Newton.
I don't know. Man.
Who cares?
We're getting sidetracked.
It doesn't matter.
But you're right about that. And in my takeaway from it is he's one of these guys. And we've on our show, I know you guys have as well, we've talked to a lot of these survivors, a lot of these people, and some of them don't take it as well as others. I know I wouldn't. Some people get out of it and are more optimistic, and he is a glass full kind of guy. I mean, he just is. He's remarkable when he talks about it, how calm he is. And he's gone through hell.
I think you'd be kind of like me. You'd be bitter.
Sure.
I'd be very bitter.
A lot of guys are, and I understand that. But it's not like he's one of these guys who, you know, got shot, bled out, forgot everything, got back, rehabbed, and is back to, you know, as good as ever. I mean, this guy is still suffering a lot physically, as he details, and is really, you know, kind of able to put a lot of this stuff aside and keep moving forward. Pretty admirable stuff, I thought.
This is one of those, this event is one of those events where you were as a kid and you talked to your parents about the Kennedy assassination and they would be like,
yeah,
you know, they were probably in elementary school and be like,
sure,
I remember everything about that day. I remember where it was. You know, 9/11, we all remember everything.
For me, it was a Challenger explosion as a kid. It was a big day. That was a really big day.
I was a little too young for that.
Right, but that's one of those days for kids who were 9 or 10 at the time.
Yeah.
Sure.
And this, you know, event,
no question.
I remember everything about it. I lived in Watertown at the time. And I remember getting the call from my friend at, you know, 12:30, 1 in the morning saying, dude, there's something going on. I just saw about 50 cop cars just speed by my house.
Right.
And I never went to sleep. I stayed up all that night. The program director at the time, Jason Wolf, called me at 6 in the morning, making sure I was safe.
Called me at 4 o'clock that morning, told me to get in here, that it's going on. And Dino
he called me back at 9 and said, right, get in here. I was like,
Dino,
I'm on lockdown,
Dino,
dude.
Jerry, and I started the show that day at about 5 o'clock. I mean, I didn't want to tell Dick this, but I feel like we were the real heroes of that day in a lot of ways. We got there an hour earlier.
You have often been the real heroes of
that. I try to be. And, you know, he saw the movie and he was tweeting about the movie and had some thoughts. And, you know, I am going to go see this, I said, Wednesday, and I'm not struggling with it or anything, but it does seem strange to me. And I understand this is life, and I'm not, somebody's going to tell somebody what to do with their money, but it does seem weird that this movie does really well. Mark Wahlberg's going to make $30, $35 million because these idiots laid these bombs out and killed people, and people lost their limbs. It feels wrong. It feels off, if that makes sense.
Does it feel similar to you as the feeling when United 93 came out?
A little bit, but I'll be honest, not really. In that, as terrible as 9/11 was, obviously
too far removed.
And B, I'm in Boston. I mean, I'm in. It just feels different. And the one thing I'll say about United 93 is there's no face of it. They purposely sort of cast unknowns in that movie.
That's fair.
And Mark Wahlberg is a really big star and has tied himself into Boston and this movie. So that part, and I'm being inconsistent because, you know, I'll go see Saving Private Ryan, or I'll go see United 93, and I'm not going to sit there and say, I can't watch this movie. This one, it's going to be in my head the whole time, and I'm going to be judging it while I'm watching it.
That's absolutely fair. My girlfriend came up to me the other day and said, we have to go see that. And I was kind of, I don't know if I really want it.
A lot of people talk to me and say, that we did a couple hours the other day and you get calls and it's 50, it's like 50-50. There are people who will not see this movie.
The reason I'm iffy on seeing it has nothing to do with, it's more about a quality thing for me.
Well,
I just don't know
thing.
How good it's going to be.
I think it's going to be hard to pull off. But so we had Dick Donahue on with us for about a half hour. He talked about the movie in some length, talked about his own experience, what he's going through, how he's doing now, and how he's going to do in the future. A good conversation, and a timely one, with Dick Donahue.
That was actually, I got to say, that was a pretty funny tweet like a week ago. That was pretty good. That was a good spoiler for those who haven't seen the movie, right?
Yeah, I mean, you wonder what happens to the guy that's
yes.
rolling around on the ground.
Now we know.
He makes it.
Right. What is it like? I guess I'll ask first, was that scene depicted, and what's it like watching yourself in a movie, you know, being shot?
You know what? I've already lived through it, so nothing
right.
can really replicate how things perfectly 100% went down. It's not something you'd ever think would happen. You know, you go to work one day, and, you know, I know it's a few years later, but a few years later, there you are on the big screen. It's kind of weird and extremely surprising to me, coming from just what my life was like before that.
I mean, are you sure even almost 4 years later, exactly what happened?
Not too much. I've recovered a little bit of memory, but I have a lot of memory loss even going back 6 months before that event. So I remember that like split second and being like, uh-oh, this isn't good.
Right.
And then really after that, waking up a few days later in the hospital.
I guess I'd ask first, what did you think when the movie was first announced? Was your thought process, well, this kind of has to happen, this is part of life, you know, these things happen when there's a war, there's this or that, movies are made? Or was your first reaction, this just doesn't seem right to me that people are going to make money off of what I went through and Sean Collier and obviously the Richard family? I mean, where were you when you first, from a thought process, when you heard the movie was going to happen?
You know, thinking back, I could think back to being in the hospital bed and say, here we go. You know, it's going to happen. It's a big event, big city. Lots of good things came from it as well. So I'm a realist, so I realized that, hey, this is probably going to happen at some point, and you can really just hope for the best, because you can protest all day long, you can support it all day long, but in the grand scheme of things, it was probably going to happen regardless. So just kind of deal with it and live my life kind of separately. You know, when everything was first announced, my wife was about 8.5 months pregnant anyhow.
Right.
So I was waiting for baby number two. That was what was the most important thing in my life. So, you know, that certainly takes precedence.
Were you consulted during the process of the movie?
A little bit. They pulled in a few people. I talked with Peter Berg and the writers and some of the other folks. I'm not sure what their titles are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they wanted to get a feel for some of the stories and some of the experiences that I went through or other people went through around me, and then they invited me out to a couple of, I'd say shootings, but that's not a good word, a couple of tapings.
Right, yeah. So, during the, right.
When I say shooting, you know, you're going
to. Well, I think you're allowed to say it. I'm probably not in this conversation. You could say it. I can't. So I guess I'll ask. So you went and you saw it, and, I mean, what did you think of the movie?
You know, I have a lot of conflicting emotions.
I could tell, man. That's part of the reason why I wanted to have you on, is I can tell just from Twitter, I can tell that, you know, it seems like you're, which is, listen, I mean, I'm in no ways is a criticism. I totally get it, as much as I could get what somebody like you was going through in the situation. There has to be just, you know, massive confliction, right?
Yeah, of course. You know, you want them to show everything that was good, but, you know, it's not going to be a 6-hour documentary. So again, being a realist, you know, I came and I said, I hope they at least give it a pretty good shot and realize that, you know, they're going to have to embellish some things. They're going to have to leave some stories out. You know, there's thousands of stories that could be told, incredible things that happened, and just realizing that, that, you know, some things are going to have to be left out. And, you know, luckily I'll get to savor some of the stories and relationships and some of the things that I'll only share with just a few of my friends and family, and just, you know, appreciate everything that I have on my end.
Well, what were the issues? So when you saw the movie, we can get to the stuff you liked, but I'll start with first. What are the couple of things that you didn't like?
I'm not going to talk too much in depth today. There were some things that I certainly think that could have done better or could have been developed a little more. When Sean Collier was killed, it really sparked a chain reaction. You know, it was earlier that day that the suspect photos were released, mm-hmm. and just a few hours later, a police officer gets killed. So now everybody's looking for a terrorist who, to be honest, a lot of people thought had fled town, at least from, you know, being a boots on the ground kind of guy. And now a friend of yours gets killed, a police officer gets killed, and people are flooding into Cambridge. So it's not only are we looking for the Boston Marathon bombers, but hey, somebody just killed a cop too. So it struck a chord that I don't think was quite focused on a lot in the film.
Yeah. How about the idea that did it bother you at all? The fact that Mark Wahlberg is an invented character or a composite character, and he's the lead in this movie, is sort of feels wrong to me. Is that a legitimate criticism or no?
I can see where people are coming from on it. Again, it's something that I had to kind of realize that at least they're saying he's a made up type character. You know, there's a lot of stories. A lot of heroes. I don't consider myself a hero, but there's a lot of heroes. A lot of people that did some incredible things that week, and it would be hard if you had 50 lead characters in it, because I think you could have at least that number.
Sure.
At least that number of truly incredible things that people did.
Can you explain the Dennis Simmons situation to me? Tim Whale and the state rep came out talking about it. I know, obviously, you knew him. He received a head injury from, I think, a pipe bomb when it happened, then died a year later when he was exercising. It seems to me the family is not happy he wasn't included in the movie. Is that accurate or no?
That sounds pretty accurate. You know, I realized earlier this year that he may have been missing that story, and I certainly voiced my opinion afterwards that, you know, he was the fifth and at this point final victim of the Sarnaev's, you know, carnage throughout Boston and Cambridge and Watertown. And you know, I think personally that he should be included at the end and certainly mentioned, because, you know, he died because he went to work that day to fulfill his duties, fulfill his oath, and do everything and anything he could to keep people of Boston, keep people of Massachusetts safe.
How about the idea that we have had Mark Fucarill on the show a couple of times, and our producers have talked to other survivors, and there seems to be some frustration that, and this is, again, it's hard for me to do this. Mark Wahlberg, if the movie does well, he's a producer, he's a star. You know, some people say he can make up to $35, $40 million off this movie, and they've donated, you know, a couple hundred thousand dollars. And I'm not a big fan of telling somebody what to do with their money, but it feels off to me. Is that something that you echo, or do you stay out of that, or where are you on that?
I tend to stay out of it. I mean, from a business standpoint, they don't have to give anybody anything. You know,
business.
It's their job. You know, so at one point I can see where people are frustrated, but on the other hand, they are doing, you know, some things for charity. They're giving to the American Red Cross, mm-hmm. as one of the big charities. And as you may or may not know, that I was a major blood recipient.
Right,
if
sure.
For the folks at the Red Cross, I wouldn't be alive.
So right.
Even just getting the word out that there are charities involved. Hopefully that, you know, that it'll be something like, you know, after the Boston Marathon, so much good that was done, just to kind of keep things going and allow some of these charities and organizations to continue to help people. And I think that's extremely, extremely important. So like I said, if there's at least one good thing that comes out of it, is that there is a charity element.
How about you? It's been, you know, 3.5 years just about now. I mean, how was your mental state? I mean, do you suffer from mental illness after this? Do you still get upset? Do you have trouble sleeping? Flashbacks?
Did I suffer from mental illness before?
You may have before as well. Yeah, maybe. I don't think you got cured that day, but I'm saying, do you battle this stuff still? Is it something that's with you every day?
Not really. I have some memory issues just because of, I was diagnosed with a traumatic brain injury, and I have a little bit of memory and handwriting issues that kind of pop up, but I don't try to let these things get in my way. You know, the things that make me craziest in life are my, two boys going crazy and chasing the dog around the house.
Right.
So I focus on what I have now, and really kind of a motto that I learned from some folks is figure out what's important now and focus on that, and focus on the things you need to do and the things you can do well.
I can understand that, but from in a physical standpoint, obviously a different conversation, but just
yeah.
I'm curious more mentally, say, a few months in, were there down days, were there days you're thinking this is I'm not going to come back from this, or were you always optimistic about it?
Right now I'm still optimistic. I was optimistic for a long time, but I think at some point, even when I had to retire, it was a tough decision because I had to realize that, hey, I'm at a physical end point. Things may or may not get better, and now is the time to make a decision and to realize where I'm at and realize I might have some limitations and challenges the rest of my life, but don't let those things get. I try not to let these things get in my way, and push forward and do the best I can with everything I have. And to be honest, I'm living on a pretty good second chance this time around after I was essentially dead. So I look back and I say, well, if today was a tough day, I think April 19th through the 21st, when I was basically in a coma, were a heck of a lot worse.
Yeah, not a lot of people who bleed out and survive is my guess. I'm guessing that the percentage is not high.
It's pretty low. I actually do a nationwide police training. It's a 2.5-day training, and I'm the last segment. And they teach about buddy aid and caring for people who are injured or get arterial wounds like I do and use the tourniquet. And they give the estimate that you have about 3 to 6 minutes to live if you don't get a tourniquet or get somebody to the hospital when they have an arterial bleed. And then they say, but the next guy you're going to hear from is going to basically blow those statistics out of the
yeah,
water.
How long was it for you?
I was out of it and done for before they could sew me up for about 40, 45 minutes.
Jesus.
I lost about 90% of the blood in my body. So, thankful every day I got taken to Mount Auburn Hospital, and the real heroes took over from there and put me back together.
Where were you? When the bombing actually happened?
I was standing in front of Marianne, so I could smell the stale beer over there at Cleveland Circle.
Oh, so you're right in the route. Yeah.
Yep. So it was, I remember. I didn't remember for a long time, and now I clearly remember where I was when everything happened.
I mean, could you even imagine at the time, when you first even heard, forget, when you first heard the explosion or whatever, you see, like everybody else, I mean, could you possibly imagine then when you found out the bombing, how that would actually, interact with your life, whatever, 3 days later? Is that right? 3 days later? 4 days later?
Just about 3.5 days later.
Yeah.
No, not at all. Not at all. First is the shock that, you hear the first radio call and you're like, oh, okay, nothing. Maybe some idiot pulling some stunt, like the guy that used to run and jump and grab people off the course, thinking it was that idiot again.
Right.
And then when you hear the second radio call, it's the, this is serious stuff. And then really, do I think 3 days later it's going to affect me and the people around me so much? I could never, ever have believed it.
We've had Chief Devereaux in with us a couple of times on the show, and he said nobody in that department ever fired a gun in action, right? Is that right?
As far as I've heard, that's correct. And then they have a team shootout on April 19th.
And you have no memory of that night whatsoever?
A little bit here and there.
A little bit.
Going to work and things have slowly come back. I remember texting with a buddy of mine earlier that night and kind of making fun of each other. And that was actually before Sean was killed. And I remember just a little bit being there and then riding around with another transit police officer around Cambridge. And then next thing I know, we're in Watertown, and the lights go dark for a few days from there.
Do you think if you could, would you want to remember it all if you could or no?
Absolutely. I'd like to fill the gaps. I mean, to be honest, I don't even remember my kid's first Christmas a few months before that.
Yeah.
So I'd love to get a few of those memories back, you know, the good and the bad, if I could. And like I said about the physical state, if they come back, that's fantastic. And if not, I can live my life regardless.
Were you pro death penalty?
I tend to only share that those thoughts because of the crazies on either side of the equation. I tend to just keep that opinion to myself. But my main opinion was, regardless of what was going to happen during the trial, we knew that Jahar Tsarnaev wasn't going anywhere and isn't going to do anything for the rest of his life, no matter how short or how long it is.
Were you frustrated at all? We did a lot of shows on it. Were you frustrated at all when you would read some of these op-eds from people that say, you know, a guy like this deserves to stay alive. He deserves a chance of rehabilitation. We had one expert on who said his brain was not fully formed yet. He wasn't an adult. Would you read stuff like that, or would you try and stay away? Did you go to the trial a lot or no?
I didn't go a lot. There was a lot of things that, to be honest, trials are pretty boring.
Pretty monotonous, right? Yeah.
Hearing, you know, everybody, before you can get into what they're testifying about, you basically have to give a bio on your life.
Right.
So after hearing enough of that, you know, the FBI tech stuff is cool, but I don't need to hear about triangulating cell phones and bouncing off towers. I have heard enough of that. Last me a lifetime. But, you know, I did go to the trial. I went to a few days of it here and there. I went to when they talked about Watertown and when they covered the murder of Officer Collier, and certainly the first few days, and in the last few days of the actual trial, I did attend.
Did you watch the HBO documentary?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
I thought it was pretty. It was footage probably you've seen and I haven't seen. I thought some of it was unbelievable, especially, you know, the part where the kid. This poor kid goes into the gas station, is begging to use the phone, and the guy who's running the gas station is looking at him like, yeah, give me a fucking second, which I have things to do. It was wild to me. I'm thinking, this is unbelievable.
Yeah, it
I mean, Jesus.
That was pretty crazy. The thing for me is, you know, I've met, I think, everybody in that documentary. I had, you know, basically lived at Spalding Rehab for a month, and some of these folks were, you know, doing rehab alongside of me, and it tells a lot of the stories that you don't see behind the scenes. You don't realize that what one incident in 1 second can change your life for forever.
Do you have a good relate? I mean, you used to talk to these other survivors, a lot of these the bombing survivors as well, frequently, or do you see them a lot? Is there some sort of communication still?
I think so. Things pop up in the community. You know, living out in the burbs now, I don't have to go to Boston that much either. So
right.
I'm kind of lazy in that regard. But I certainly do see a lot of folks. I'm actually attending an event with the Arredondo Foundation tomorrow, I think. Tomorrow. I don't even know what day it is. Tomorrow. So there's certainly, when folks do some great charity work, or I see people at the Red Cross blood drives, I definitely keep in contact with several of the other survivors and people affected by the family, or families affected, like the Colliers.
Are you able? You said you had some handwriting issues, some memory issues. Does the injuries, other stuff, affect your day in, day out life in terms of, you know, playing with the kids or doing this or doing that? Are you affected greatly or limited somewhat, or where are you at right now today physically?
Physically today, basically my entire left foot. Burns. Burns all the way up to my knee, my left leg. I don't want to give you a complaint session.
I think you're allowed to say. I'll give you a couple, yeah. Dick, and I'll tell you to shut up. Yeah. You're allowed two or three, okay?
Oh, that's fine. My wife doesn't want to hear it anyway. She's heard it for 3 years.
Right.
But you know, physically, I am limited. I used to really enjoy running, and now it hurts. It's hard, and yeah. I'm extremely slow. I've all but had to give that up. I'm definitely not going to be a competitive runner anymore because it's getting old. But that's something that I've kind of had to push to the wayside because when I tried, I injured the other side, and it takes me a long time to recover from that. And, you know, occasionally I'll trip going down the stairs, and it's something that, you know, I don't realize it's there, but now thinking about it, I can definitely feel my foot on fire as we speak. But try not to limit me too much, but it does get in the way, especially later in the day.
You talk about your memory issues, about not being able to remember stuff, but can you remember, I mean, is your memory issues, memory okay if I asked you about like 2 weeks ago or 6 months ago?
Yeah.
That part's fine,
yeah? Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I'm back in school now, and I haven't used that as an excuse yet, but I haven't got my final grade, so yeah. I always pull that one out. But
yeah. So what do you do?
No, it's really just the time period in my life, and then just occasionally forgetting things and just having to have everything kind of written out.
So you retired? I want to say you retired like 10 months ago. Is that right or no? Am I wrong? February this year? No,
I wasn't back for that long after I went back to work in 2015. But officially, it didn't kick in until earlier in 2016.
I mean,
I think I was officially off the books in July, but I wasn't working any time this year for the police.
I mean, did you try and go back and work, and you just said this isn't happening, or?
I did, and then I weighed what the department could accommodate and what I was comfortable with and that sort of thing. You know, I'm certainly not going to put somebody else's life or safety, whether it be a fellow officer or a civilian, if you know, something happens and I'm not quick enough, or if I trip getting out of a cruiser, because you know, it occasionally happens that it wasn't going to work out for me long term, and it wasn't going to work out and wasn't going to be fair for the department to keep me on either. So I just weighed a few of those things and talked with a lot of people about where I can go with my future and what I should do and what the right decision is. And I'm very confident I made it.
I mean, obviously you seem like an optimistic guy. But that must have been, I'm guessing, and I'll let you answer, if not crushing, you know, upsetting, I would think, to some extent, for you to have to do that.
It was a tough decision. Because I'd said all along that that I wanted to get back to the job. I wanted to get back to policing. So when you look at it, and you look back, you say, was it when did I fail? You know, was I not man enough? Did I fail? Was I not strong enough? And then I had to be reminded, and a lot of folks, you know, gave me the heads up, and people have been through similar situations. They said, hey, Dick, you know, even if you made it back for a minute or a day, you still accomplish that goal. So I can look back and say, you know what, I accomplished it. I accomplished it with the help of a lot of people. And now I have the opportunity to take my experiences and continue to make an impact in my community, even through other channels.
Yeah. So what are you doing now? You mentioned school. What's going on? What's going on with you now?
Yeah, I'm pursuing a doctoral degree, so a PhD in criminal justice at UMass Lowell. That keeps me pretty busy. And I also participate in a nationwide Bureau of Justice Assistance training program. So I travel with that pretty frequently. I also I travel on my own to do speaking about what organizations and officers can do to best prepare themselves and their families and the people around them for a situation like mine, because it can happen any day. Any day, and people should be ready and be prepared.
Is this Valor for Blue? Is that right or no?
Yes, that's correct.
Yes. And you find that, I mean, you find this second act of your career to be as satisfying as when you were, you know, in day in, day out duty as an officer?
It's a fantastic program. So I absolutely 100% support. I'm pretty proud to even have been offered the opportunity to be a part of that group. And I just got back from Buffalo, so I got to make fun of some officers out there for being Bills fans. But really share my story and hopefully make a difference. And similarly, by pursuing a PhD and hopefully getting to teaching in the future, that I'll be able to share some things and shed some light on the next generation of leaders in criminal justice.
I know it's corny, and I know it's probably going to be part of the message of the movie, which I'm going to see in a couple of days. You saw it, but there is something. I grew up here. I know you grew up here too. There is something to the idea of Boston and what it means in situations like what happened 3.5 years ago. I mean, I absolutely believe the city of Boston would react differently than other cities. Maybe that's me being sentimental, but it does feel that way.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, for me, I was on the receiving end, and it was pretty special, the things that people did. I mean, I went to work one day just as a cop, you know, kind of minding my own business, And then the next day I'm involved and tied in with this incident. Even when I was thinking about it, you know, the first couple of days after the bombing, I was like, man, I want to get one of those Boston Star T-shirts. They're only making 300 of them. You know, right. I want to be part of that.
Right.
And being kind of excited about that, and then just a couple of days later, I'm on the receiving end of that, and there was just so much, so many great stories and selfless acts of people that made a difference. You know, again, this would be like a 24-hour documentary if they wanted to even scratch the surface of what some of those great things were. So if you look at it on the bright side of things, it's all those good things that came out of something so evil and so terrible.
Do you buy into the, you know, your perspective changes when you have a situation like you had, but I'm guessing even like now, so it's been a couple of years, do you find you might find yourself bitching about something, complaining about something during the day, and then you step away and say, what am I doing? Why am I complaining about, you know, a line at a supermarket or traffic? I mean, does that happen to you now or no?
Kirk, I'm actually wired differently. I don't mind the big things, and the little things actually drive me crazy. So I absolutely complain about lines and everything. So the little things, if I drop my coffee,
right,
it's going to ruin my day.
Right.
But I can't complain. You know, people are upset about, say, you know, this movie coming out, or you know, somebody totals my car, or it's the big things, they don't bother me as much.
But you can park wherever you want now, though, right?
I could, technically.
You don't?
I could do that before. But.
Oh. Well, there you go. That's a good point. You never have to worry about traffic. You know, you've lived here your whole life, right?
I took some time. I mean, I went to school in Virginia, and then I lived overseas for a little
right.
while.
But right,
I've been
right.
here for most
But that's
of my
what
life.
I mean. Is it me, or is traffic right now worse than it's ever been in my life here? What happened? What is going on?
Look, when I was looking at second career type things, I said, look, I live north of the city. I didn't quite make it back to Winchester. I got a little priced out of the market, so I couldn't make it back home.
So did I.
I tried to, you know, maybe push my grandmother out. She lives near the country club. But
what year did you graduate Winchester High?
I was 98.
98? I was 93. So we missed each other, yeah.
Yeah. Missed each other by a couple of years.
Yeah.
But I lived north of the city, and I said, you know, I'm going to avoid driving into Boston at all costs. And I successfully accomplished that, I'd say, you know, 28 out of 30 days per month.
Yeah, it's true. But still, you know, 95 sucks, 93 sucks for two. I don't know what the hell happened. I'll ask you this. If somebody, you know, if somebody comes up to you today or tomorrow and says, hey, I have some reservations about seeing this movie. I'm worried I'm going to be upset. I'm worried about, you know, Hollywood making money off this. Should I go see this movie? Would you recommend this movie? I guess would be my question. Would you tell them yes or no?
That's a tough question. You know, it's a personal call. I think each person can decide whether they want to see it or not. If they feel exploitive, then you're going to come out of it feeling like it was exploitive, even if it was great. Even if the movie itself is great. If you think that it's going to be superior, they're going to show certain things, you could be surprised that, you know, they leave certain things out. So it's really, I think, and I know at least locally, it's going to be a personal call. You know, I know folks that, you know, nurses that worked on me, they said, I'm not going to see it. Or officers that, you know, worked in Boston or worked in Marathon, they may want to see it, or they may not want to relive that. So it's pretty graphic. It's at some points it's gory. So, you know, I would caution folks about that, especially if they were involved in some of these incidents. But if you want to look at it, you know, conversely, you know, there's some, and I think we talked about it already, there's some powerful messages about our community and about our overall resilience that it definitely scratches the surface of, yes.
Is there any foundation stuff or anything you want to promote for us? Anything you have coming up?
Oh, don't blow my cover. I'm actually meeting with somebody tomorrow. So hopefully in 2017, I have some good things going on. So I've been kind of mulling it for a while, and then between school and the kids and doing other things in my life, things get put off, but hopefully in 2017 we'll have some good things going on. But One thing that anybody can do any day of the week, and it's free, is donating blood. You can find a blood drive. I might go this week to donate blood because I needed it to survive. And I've met other people, whether it be a car accident or a surgery, where they need your blood, even on a moment's notice. So you can find the Red Cross blood drives or a hospital blood drive. Just go in. Takes less than an hour total to get in and out. You might get some cookies and a T-shirt as well. And
there you go.
Something you can do in the community to make a difference, and it's 100% free.
I'll ask you the most important. Thanks for that, and I'll ask you the most important question to wrap it up. What's the best pizza place in Winchester?
Bellino's is closed.
Gone. I love Bellino's.
You know, I lived. I actually lived near Louis Pizza, which is technically
That's Woburn.
But I mean, I went to Lynch School, so it's like right. I mean, you could basically walk there from my house growing up.
Dick, it was never. Every time I saw it, it was never open. It was
It technically is never open. And Sundays, you have to order first thing in the morning. That's one of Winchester. And I'm a glorious steak and cheese.
Oh,
guy,
glorious
to
is
be
great.
Honest.
I've always been an Andrea's loyalist my whole life, though. That was my place. That was the great place you would go at like 11 o'clock at night when there was no party.
Yeah.
Bill and Bob's in Woburn, to be fair.
Right. You know, but that's just over the line. That's
I know it doesn't.
Yards of line.
It doesn't qualify. It doesn't qualify.
I definitely give Andrea's a shout out too. There.
Yeah. When the Bellino's closed? When was that?
When was what?
When the Bellino's closed. That was a while ago.
It was a while ago. It was open when I was a kid, though.
I've never been to that. Louis, is that what it's called?
Mm-hmm.
I've driven by it, Dick, I would say in my life. I'm not kidding here because I grew up in Winchester. I would say 2,000 times. I think it's been open twice when I've driven by it in my life. I always thought it was like a mob front.
You got to, if you go right after work and you get there. I know it's open 11 to 1 because I would pop in there at least for an afternoon slice.
What kind of place is open from 11 to 1?
I know it's open then.
Okay, I got
it's hard to park, but it's definitely open.
All right, excellent. Well, maybe we'll grab a slice there one time. I'll pay for it. Dick, we really appreciate it, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, thanks so much. Right.
Thanks,
care.
Dick.
All
right, bye. All right, thanks again for listening to the Enough About Me podcast. Actually, you know what? I'm really not thankful at all. You should be thanking me. You get this shit every week, these great podcasts, totally free. Do me a favor. Would you go to iTunes, download it, go to Stitcher, do the same, and leave a rating, leave a review. That's where you can help me out. This podcast is going to be number one again. I guarantee it. And you're going to help me along with the process. So for that, I guess at the end, maybe I will thank you. There's a lot of thank yous going back and forth. Here's the point. Fuck you.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.